Peace and love. Peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, here's the host of Good Things Radio, Brooke Taylor.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to episode number 145. My name is Brooke Taylor, a housewife who has not figured it out. I'm so excited to be with you, so excited to bring you this jam-packed show today. And it's a big month. We're now looking into August. And in general, if you have kids, it's busy because we're starting now to prepare for back to school. Extracurricular sports are picking up. For me personally, it's a big month because it's a big birthday, and I'm going to, as many times as possible, use the phrase, I'm still in my 30s until August 22nd, when I'm out of that decade and I turn 40, which is crazy. But in preparation for that, I've been trying to do a lot of things. So in the last show, we talked about the half marathon training with my son for the Presque Isle half marathon. So we'll talk a little bit about that, strengthening the spiritual endurance that comes with that process. And I am happy to say the race did happen. My son and I both did finish. And I would probably normally add something like self-deprecating there, but I'm not going to do it this time. I just say all glory to God because things have been intense and heavy in my life. So it's really nice to be able to set a goal, achieve it, go for it, and reach it. And it felt like it was long overdue. So we'll touch on that a little bit. Also, on today's program, what do a former collegiate softball athlete, pageant contestant, and a priest have in common? They're both actually guests on today's show, and I'm really excited to introduce you to Tara Blackwell. She was the university softball player, now Miss Florida Wheelchair USA, part of an event that I MC every year. Had a chance to sit down and talk to her about a life-changing moment for her as a young woman, a standout athlete who in just an instant was paralyzed, and how she's taken that, how God has led her through that, and where she is today. So we're going to talk to her about that on the show. Also, Father Nathan Cromley's back with A Padre in Your Pocket. It's so good to hear from him. His theme is totally something we could all use at any time, too. He's going to be talking about dealing with difficult people. That's all coming up on today's show. So recently, I had a chance to MC what has become an annual highlight for me. This is my fifth year as being part of the Miss Wheelchair USA competition as MC. And without fail, every year I come away inspired, filled with renewed determination because these ladies are extraordinary. Whether or not they're in a wheelchair or not, they're just amazing women. So when you're in that environment, you hear their stories and you get a chance to have that rub off on you a little bit, it changes you. And it's impossible not to think about your own life. How much determination do I have? If I were in the same position, would I have the faith, endurance, and perseverance and everything else that these women live every day? So I wanted to take you into the evening and into the story of one of our contestants. And just to give you a quick snapshot. So the winner this year of Miss Wheelchair USA is Miss Pennsylvania, Heather Tomko. And her bio is incredible. She's a graduate of Carnegie Mellon University. I'm reading this now. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical and Biomedical Engineering. She's also a Master of Public Health student at the University of Pittsburgh. She's a research coordinator there. And she was born with a spinal muscular atrophy, but all of these contestants have different stories. There's a wonderful, amazing woman, Navy veteran, that has ALS. When you're diagnosed with that, the outlook, the prognosis is 3 to 6 years. And just how everything is turned on its head. And so to be able to hear her, and that was interesting because she, Yvette, was an amazing contestant. And as you can imagine, a pageant week like this takes a lot out of these ladies. And there's 2 nights of actual competition. So by the last night, the final night of competition, Yvette had been talking and using her voice so much that her throat was beginning to close up. And wherever they travel, she and her husband, they've got to be in touch with hospice. So they were in this case. They were going to do a nebulizer treatment. But these are the things, you know, the audience didn't know this. And she also has an audio device that assists in her speaking when she can't get the words out. And these are things that behind the scenes, I'm talking with her husband, making sure she's okay. Is she getting what she needs? But then it's showtime, right? She's got to go out there. She's got to do her thing. And people don't know. And when you see a glimpse of the caregivers and these contestants and the ways that they overcome challenges every single day, every corner of their life, it really is extraordinary. One of the contestants that I connected with was Tara Blackwell, and I wanted to share her story with you because she's an athlete. She's a woman of faith, and I think that goes along right into the theme that we've talked a lot about lately. But for her, for Tara, it again brought back Romans chapter 5. We even boast of our afflictions, knowing that affliction produces endurance, endurance character, proven character hope, and hope does not disappoint. And she is a living, breathing witness of hope. And that's something that we all need, examples to look to when it's hard and we're faced with the challenge, because we know that God doesn't waste anything. He uses it all in some way. And Tara Blackwell exemplifies that. So just to give you a little intro of her story, she again was a softball player, excellent athlete, which I know she'll talk about. And I would say she still is, by the way, but a backflip changed her life instantly. And she'll explain that more into her story. I was able to sit down with her. So you'll hear it's a little bit noisy with the backstage audio, but take a listen to her story. Here's Tara Blackwell, Miss Florida, Wheelchair USA.
What a blessing it has been to meet the ladies of the Miss Wheelchair USA competition again this year, and one by one learn their stories, get a chance to spend a few minutes with each woman to be inspired. And one of the ladies this year that I had an opportunity to get to know a little bit, still learning about the story of Tara Blackwell. Tara is Miss Florida Wheelchair USA and from the Pensacola area. And I want you to share your story. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to have you start with, I guess, that day.
Okay.
That's kind of where we'll drop into the story. The day that everything changed. You were a collegiate athlete, a softball player, a cheerleader. Did you have any gymnast experience as well?
I did. I was a cheerleader. I played volleyball, soccer, swam, every sport you can imagine. But softball was my life. And I knew that that's what I wanted to pursue on a collegiate level. And I was in my sophomore year of college, playing for Troy University, and I was at the prime of my career. You know, I sat the bench my whole freshman year and fought for that position, and when I was finally given the opportunity, I earned the starting position at second base.
So you're setting the table. You're just a little bit competitive, it sounds like.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. No quit, that's for sure. So we were on an away trip in Nashville, Tennessee, the middle of my sophomore year. And some of us were just goofing off doing cheerleading tricks. And I was actually doing a backflip where you step into someone's hands and push off their shoulders and flip backwards. And we were just sort of out of sync. And I landed on my neck and was instantly paralyzed.
And so did you wake up and get this news? How did that moment become a reality?
Well, as strange as it is to say, you know, I had never even met anyone at that point in my life who was paralyzed. But in that moment, I knew that that was the case. I just, you know, it was instant feeling. My body instantly went into shock, but I was conscious the whole time. So I never really faded off to sleep or anything like that. I was beginning to struggle breathing because my diaphragm, you know, was also affected with the paralysis. But the ambulance got there in time before I, you know, passed out or anything like that, and took me to the hospital. And I believe I knew instantly that I was paralyzed.
One of the things that you said in your platform was like right between the eyes for me. Mm-hmm. And you said, people ask me if I could take back that moment, if I could take back that flip, mm-hmm. would I? And you said, I struggle to say that I would. Take us into that process and where you were and where you are today.
Right away after my injury, you know, people, not only my family and friends, but people came out of the woodwork to support me and have literally gotten me through every single day of the last 13 years. And I've grown so much because of that. And I value things very differently now, my relationships, my choices every single day. And I believe that there are so many things that I've gained from the struggles that I faced that I would not be able to return, you know, replace that with the ability to walk.
Well, and I think too, as a believer, as a Christian woman, we know that God has a purpose and a plan for everything. We trust it and we live it. But then there are moments where you think, I don't know, it takes your breath away. I don't know if I could go on, if I could have the fullness of life if X, Y, or Z happened. And you have. And so I think that's such a testimony to redemption and to God's providence providing you for every step of the way. And so faith-wise for you, was that something that you leaned on that was stronger for you, or was it something that was faltering in the beginning?
I can't say that it was ever faltering, because I faced so many difficult times where, of course, I leaned in a little stronger. And just by overcoming those times, I knew that there was a greater plan all along. So I would have to say that it definitely enhanced my faith a great bit.
I had a chance to interview Eric LeGrand, and he is such a great witness of optimism. And he said, you can't let your circumstance dictate your effort. And just by being alive, you bless people. And it seems like you're of that same spirit. And he's an athlete too, where you took those qualities and you have brought them into a new realm of disability advocacy and understanding. So could you talk a little bit about that, the need to have that? I mean, you're a coach.
Right.
So I guess that coach is hard as well for yourself and others.
Absolutely. Well, I think that I just kind of started thinking, you know, what values have I held on to and have I really leaned in on? Over the last 13 years, and I mean, I literally wrote down, you know, tons and tons, and then I narrowed down to 7 because of 7 being my collegiate number. And, you know, I think the support, the outpouring of support started with my teammates who literally lied on the ground next to me as I waited on the ambulance and cheered me on, you know, just to, you know, instill that fight and to support me. So from the very beginning, the number 7, Troy University, you know, really got me through those initial moments. And so I narrowed down to 7 covenants, and which are commitment, determination, faith, fortitude, support, vitality, and wellness. And I believe that those are the 7 values that I've leaned in on that have truly saved my life.
Okay, give me one example of the 7 that you can share and that anyone could apply to their life, no matter what stage they might be in.
I think, okay, well, let's start with the first one, commitment. You know, it takes a great amount of commitment, really, to complete any sort of task. But, you know, especially those goals that are going to allow you to sustain a long-term goal, which for me is living a quality life and living a long life. You know, I hear all the time about people in my same condition losing their life at a far too early age. And I want others to realize that, you know, we do not have to necessarily succumb to this, you know, belief that we are not capable of living a good quality life of wellness. And so I would say commitment is, you know, a commitment.
And so it sounds like because you've been so focused on that, there hasn't been room for, I don't want to say depression, because we all have ups and downs in the realities of things, but it sounds like you have just funneled all of your energy into those 7 principles.
Absolutely. You know, of course I have my times just like anyone else, and I've had my funks, and you know, I've gone through great loss since my injury. I've gone through a lot of growing up and things that we all go through aside from my condition. And, you know, you just have to keep going. And when you keep going, there will always be another door that opens up, always.
I think that's also great advice for young adults as a mom of teenagers and just seeing the communities and the young people and how depression's being diagnosed younger and younger. And so many people feeling like, oh, I can't go on. And like you said, I think we all have our funks. I myself just recently in training for a half marathon had to really face some of the things that I struggle with. Sometimes I feel sorry for myself because I have a situation where I feel overwhelmed. And so to see the way that you've lived that out is inspiring. And I guess any final words for young people that as we talk about that and to impart a sense of joy and hope for them as well?
I just think, I think back to some of the struggles that I've been through. And in that moment, it's easy to feel like that's it, like you can't possibly move on. But you always can, you just have to kind of take a deep breath and push forward and think about, okay, I have to grow from this opportunity and there will be another opportunity that lies ahead.
Yeah. And I want a spotlight to be shining on what you're doing and for people to know about it. Can you share how we can find you or the Seven Project?
Yes, I'm on Facebook, Tara Blackwell, and I have a Seven Project page on Facebook as well, www.facebook.com/the7project, and that's the number 7 project.
Thank you, Tara. God bless you.
Wow. Thank you again so much to Tara. You can find her again, The Seven Project, you can find online. She's on social media. And I've been reading a lot, following a lot about David Goggins. He's someone that was on my radar probably about a decade ago. But because of this book, Living with a CO by Jesse Eitzler, that we've been reading over the summer, I talked about in the last show, episode number 144, David Goggins has kind of been our virtual coach. One of the quotes he says reminded me of Tara, and he says, everybody comes to a point in their life when they want to quit, but it's what you do at that moment that determines who you are. And that's what Tara said, keep going no matter what, and how there are so many things that she has gained through her injury. And that, again, I think is something to take note of. I think we fear adversity. We're scared. I mean, we don't want to be uncomfortable. But I love the Seven Project and how that can be applied to all aspects of our life. So again, thank you so much to Tara for joining us and reminding us to lean in. Thank you, Mark. Producer Mark put that music down there. I think it's possible we probably all heard that song like close to 500,000 times in our life, but it still, doesn't it pump you up every time? I didn't have it on my playlist. I maybe should have with the half marathon running soundtrack, but I did have my Garmin watch. I had my Hoka shoes. I had my rosary and my son as we completed our half marathon just a couple weeks ago. The last show was where I left off in our training. We just committed to do this. We had been training for several weeks at that point, and then the culmination of the race, and super excited that we did it. Just a quick couple notes about it, observations. It was really hot, which we expected, because when you're going to do a race in the middle of the summer, you just kind of know it's going to be hot. But I actually prefer that over the cold for some reason. But the track was really nice. There was a lot of shade. It was flat. It was by the water. So all of those ingredients to keep you inspired. And I had my buddy. I had my son next to me. Although, you got to just feel it out. He didn't want me to run side by side next to him. And that was fine. Once that was established, I thought, I'm going to just switch up my gears. I want to have negative splits. I want to be able to hold back enough where I'm competing with my best personal record, but I also want to still be able to have some fuel in the tank that I can gear shift and kick it in when I need to. Well, that didn't really work very well. I finished way slower. I think it was it was not the slowest that I've ever done, but it's close to it. The first one I ever did, I was super, super slow. But for the first time, had a different mindset shift when that happened, because I've always been so self-conscious about that, thinking if I was a real legitimate runner, then I would have a certain time that I could hang my hat on. Like the legitimacy of my running is only validated if I could do like an 8-minute mile, 9-minute mile, maintain that pace. I guess just because that was my mindset, thinking, like, I'm not really a runner if I'm going to run a 10 or 11 minute mile. That's so slow. But that's not true, because you know what? I've seen large, whatever frame might be, and they're booking it. They are fast milers. And then I've also seen people really rip that they're just a slower miler. They run 10, 11 minute miles, and that's okay. And so this race was the one that I was liberated from all of that. It was truly, truly okay. I wasn't trying to pound up on myself if I wasn't going to get there in a sub 2 hour half marathon pace. It was okay. So that was a really good feeling. You know, like I'm growing up and I'm understanding that it's about the journey, pushing myself, but not beating myself up. And there's a difference there. And I was really surprised too at how much I love the process of training. Even though it was challenging, we had this chart that was laid out every day. I would wake up, well, really it was the night before. I would go to bed and know this is what I have to run tomorrow. I have to run 3 miles, 4 miles, 6 miles, 8 miles, 11 miles, whatever it might be. So I was able to build my day around what else we had going on as a family and know that at some point, this is what I had to do. And I haven't done that in forever. In a lot of years. And it felt really good because no matter what else was going on, at least I knew I did that. I could check it off the list and I was one step closer. And so as we were in the end weeks of our training, I was talking to my son and debating about doing a marathon. It's something that I've actually signed up for twice, but I've never done it. And here we are. This is like the total tail end of my 30s, which I'm not going to run a marathon in my 30s. It's just not going to happen this month. But it is something that I've wanted to try to do. And then I've backpedaled on it because physically, it can beat up your body. And mentally, you have to really, really commit. Practically, it takes a lot of time in your life to train. But something flipped in the training process of this half marathon where for the first time, I felt like I think I can do this, especially knowing I'm halfway there. I'm not starting from zero. But I will say 13.1 is way different than running 26.2. That's still like, it's double. So as I was running the half marathon, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. No. Okay, never mind about that. But then it keeps in the back of my mind, like this little shadow that's on my shoulder. Are you going to do it or are you not going to do it? And I need to make a decision. And I gave myself a week to just chill, not think about it, relax, and not worry if I'm going to do it or not. But now I'm past that deadline. And I really, if I'm going to do it, need to take that jump and go for it. And the whole point is I want to say that I did a marathon. I want to be able to accomplish that goal and know that I set out and achieved this for my children, for myself, for the age that I'm at. I want to just embrace life more as I get older. I don't want to be afraid of anything. I don't want to let anything hold me back. But I also want to be realistic. So would love your feedback on that. Have you ever had something that was really, really big that you legitimately had reasons to put off, whether it was a project that you're working at, a dream that you wanted to step out and do? At the end of the day, it all comes down to discernment. Lord, what do you want me to do? And I know that I am called to care for my family, my kids, my husband, myself, our home. And that's pretty exhausting, that in and of itself. And I think that that's been the question is the marathon going to put more stress on my life and drain me? Or is it going to fill me up and allow me to come back to my family with greater mental health and a better outlook and physically stronger? And the truth is, I don't know the answer to that. And so that's why I'm trying to figure this out, because I don't want to say yes and embark on something and then feel like, oh, shoot, I'm stuck and it is adding stress. And now I'm really, and I mean, what if I get injured? And yet it's there and it's something that's been there and something that I do want to tackle and want to just get done. But in the meantime, the half marathon is checked off the list and I'm very grateful. So thank you for sharing in the journey. So many of you reaching out and fist bumping and high-fiving on social media. And that meant a lot. Would love to hear your thoughts, your input. And have you ever done anything like that? Let me know. feedback@goodthingsradio.com. That's how you can reach out. Also Facebook, even Voxer. You know, I love the Voxer. It's the number one in Brooke Taylor. You can reach out and leave a message that way as well. Since this is likely the last show that I'll record in my 30s.
You know I had to say that. I know it's annoying, but I had to get that in.
I wanted to share something. Whenever your birthday is, someone that you love is celebrating a birthday, that we are alive, and that is worth rejoicing every year. And a beautiful meditation from Father Edward Hayes reminded me of that, and I just wanted to close sharing it with you. He says, Christmas and birthdays are most enjoyed by children, but regardless of our age, if we can make our birthdays into true birthdays, then they can become occasions of great joy. They also become opportunities to awaken a beginner's mind, the mind of a child eager to learn and do new things. A beginner's mind is full of questions like, what if? What would happen if I tried it this way? A birthday party is like a New Year's Eve party. It's an occasion to throw off our old ways, our graduates' minds, so that we can become students of life. A birthday celebration is not just a commemoration of a past event or another notch on the staff of life. It's a challenge to be created anew. Even the custom of birthday cake decorated with candles can hold new symbolism for us. If birthdays were actually signs of losing another year of life, then it would make sense for the cake at our birthday party to have 70 or 80 candles blazing away on it for our first year. And then with each passing year, we would have one less candle. But if birthdays are understood not as a blight but as a blessing, then we can again see birthday celebrations as a life which proclaim that we have grown another year worth of wisdom and holiness. Each candle would then be a sign that we have become more luminous, more a reflection of the light of lights. And for those who fear growing old, who fear the ultimate knock of death on the door, there's another tradition at our annual birthday party which holds a secret of good news. At every birthday celebration, the party doesn't really begin until all the candles are blown out. Amen. So how do you handle difficult people? There's no way, as diplomatic as you possibly are, that you're going to go through life and not bump up against someone that you really struggle with, whether that's at church, the workplace, school, even in your own home. We see that played out every day during the summer with the kids and all the different personalities under one roof. And it's a tough thing because we have our knee-jerk reactions and our defenses that go up, and we want to handle this in a holy way, but it's not always easy to know if we're doing the right thing when it comes to difficult people. And I think half the time I'm the difficult person. So Father Nathan is going to help us with that. He's back with a brand new Padre in Your Pocket, and as always, his words are right on time. Take a listen. Padre.
Hi, everybody. This is Father Nathan with another Padre in Your Pocket. This time, I want to talk about something that affects all of us. What do we do with people who are difficult? How do we manage relationships where we're supposed to be Christian and therefore loving with personalities that just, it's not even that they're necessarily bad people. It's just that, holy cow, do they ever make our lives difficult? Sometimes it's like personalities that just sap your energy. It's like, why are you even around? Because when I am, I'm even more perplexed. And then other times it's people that actively engage in your life in a negative way and bring noxious effects. So what do we do? Because on the one hand, we're called to love, we're called to be sympathetic. And we know that for many of our own friends, we too might have difficult personalities for all that we know. I mean, nobody's perfect. Here's a couple tips for you. First of all, remember that charity requires wishing someone else's good at all times and acting for that person's good in the best of ways. It does not require absorbing your identity with that person's and becoming that person, or allowing a person who is difficult to simply ruin your life because they're difficult. In other words, love doesn't require an acceptance at every single level of your life, meaning like at the practical level. There are times where you simply have to realize this person is not going to help me get the shopping done and wipe off my children's faces and be there in a loving way for my husband when I am feeling this way. You know, like, in other words, the fact that I accept and approve of a person in the name of God doesn't necessarily mean they're the best teammate to get me through the difficulties of life on a daily basis. And that allows me the freedom to say, as much as you might be great, etc., I have other things I've got to get done. The goal of loving people and taking caring for people, in other words, doesn't mean that you can be friends actively with every person. I can, in fact, be like our Lord, who, although he had a whole world that he loved, chose 12. And if I look at the 12, especially chose 3. And he was able to invest himself in those. And then through the 3 to the 12, and from the 12 to the 72, and from the 72 out to the crowd. But it wasn't every single person on the world that he spent all of his time with. And I've got to be the same. When people are difficult, the first thing I can do, therefore, is draw a little bit of an emotional wall around my heart to be able to say that it's not because they're a human being and redeemed by Christ that I have to try to find a way to work with them actively. I can also say, I don't have time for this right now or energy for this right now, even though I indeed do love you and I do show that you are a part of my life in the appropriate measure, in the appropriate ways, at the appropriate time. Okay? And so, but this is not necessarily all the times and in all the ways and to all degrees that I am called to do that. Once I've allowed myself that little bit of that freedom, well, then I can pray for that person. And in fact, I'm called to do that. Jesus tells us to pray for your enemies and do good to those who hurt you, to those who persecute you. Well, people who take your time and cause difficulties in your life definitely fall in that category. The second thing I can do is I'll try to limit myself to where that person and I can cooperate well. And sometimes, my friends, there are people that you just can't. And with those people, you also have to be willing, like our Lord, who says, if a town or village will not accept you, we'll shake off the dust against them and move on to the next town or village. I'm not saying you can ever do that, but you have to kind of at the same time be free enough to say, you know, I just don't have a ton of time for this person right now. And let's journey together. But if I allow myself at least that ability, I'll be able to focus in where do we cooperate well. We both love making pies. Let's enter the pie competition together. But that's not quite the same thing as saying let's do everything together. If you can follow those techniques, praying for the person, looking for positive ways where you can collaborate, you'll also be able to therefore mitigate well some of the just frank difficulty that can drain us and keep us down, and that we're not necessarily called to carry. It's not because someone is difficult that I'm called necessarily to convert them. There are a lot of people out there that I will not be able to convert or not be called to convert. Let me focus in on my mission, my family, my kids, and what the Lord's called me to do there first. And then from there, in radiating concentric circles, the relationships God's put me in. And from there, I'm able to find the navigational tools to apply the time and energy that I can and need to apply in those situations. May God bless you and know I'm praying for you. Here with another Padre in your pocket. It's Padre signing off. Take care.
Thank you to Father Nathan. I feel really special that he's on the show. I just saw him on EWTN. They aired an original documentary, The Way of St. James. He was leading the pilgrimage of The Way of St. James. They went to the Santiago de Compostela over 60 miles. Well, the whole trail stretches over 500 miles. I think they did about 60. Really cool documentary. And he was also interviewed by Father Mitch Pacwa on EWTN Live. That's actually on YouTube. And I will link it up so you can at least catch that. But really good to hear from Father Nathan. As always, you can support what he's doing. Eagle Eye Ministries, stjohninstitute.com. It's S-A-I-N-T, stjohninstitute.com. And just pray for him. Then I love that he said that
it doesn't require acceptance at every level of our life when we're dealing with someone difficult, that we can approve of a person in Christian love, but we don't need to feel obligated to be yoked to them, especially when he was comparing that to our Lord and investing only 12 himself in the time that he had. So really, really great advice. Thank you so much again to Father Nathan Cromley. Thank you for Tara Blackwell, Miss Wheelchair Florida USA, and her story. It's really hard because there's so much going on. There's always highlighted movies that I wanted to share with you. There's a lot of news in the church that I wanted to be able to unpack. And the month of August is busy with back to school and just preparing. We expend so much energy when it comes to getting the school supplies and picking out the classes and the clothes and the uniform, whatever the kids are doing to get ready for back to school. But when it comes to the mental health aspect and their faith, preparing emotionally, spiritually, I think that's a point we really can work on as well. A couple years ago, I wrote a back to school rosary, all the meditations focusing on the joyful mysteries, but written in a way that speaks to the heart of kids going back to school, educators, parents, students, custodians, pastors. You can actually get that, and we will link that up for you. Really blessed to be going to a few churches and schools locally near me also, and doing a back to school talk just about how we can get ready for back to school in a spiritual way. If you'd be interested in bringing me to your church or school, I would love to come. You can find out more at my website. It's brooketaylor.us, Brooke with an E, brooketaylor.us. And we're going to rev up our shows and pick back up to do once a week episodes at the end of August, and probably around the last week of August, we're going to kick it in. And we've got guests, we've got goodies, we've got back to school topics, and a lot of things that are coming down the pike. Some projects too that we're working on. Really, really excited. And the only hint I'll drop about it is it has to do with Choose Joy, the book. And thank you for your continued support about that devotional that we released last year. We're working on something new. Something is brewing. So much appreciate your prayers in this community. So it's busy. I don't know about that marathon. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to episode number 145 of Good Things Radio. Thank you so much to our Podbean patrons. Your support means so much. And if you aren't a Podbean patron yet and you'd be interested, you can donate anything from $1 a month, $20 a month. Just go to the show notes and click on how to become a GTR good friend of the show. A big thank you to my producer, Mark Cumming, for his dynamic skills and quick work. Mark is a producer extraordinaire, so for any audio needs that you might have, check him out at cumminghomestudio.com. Don't forget, the Feast of the Assumption is a holy day of obligation. So many beautiful feast days this month as we celebrate Our Lady and the gift of our faith and our summer. God bless you. Until next time, friends. Peace and love.